a substantial increase in taxation as soon as possible. In a magazine interview, Mr. Powell said if he were Chancellor, he would increase income tax right through the income range. He said he realized this would be unpopular, but it was the only way to fight inflation effectively. Building society leaders will meet on Thursday, 2 days after the budget, to decide whether they'll be raising the 11% mortgage rates paid by Britain's 4 million homebuyers. The Building Societies Association are becoming convinced that another increase in interest rates is the only solution to the shortage of mortgage funds if the government doesn't step in with subsidies. March looks like being the fourth successive month of a bad balance of payment situation for the building societies. And there are worries that if house building is allowed to slump still further, as a result of the present state of affairs, we could be facing another house price spiral in about a year's time. An Ulster woman who was with her brother when he was gunned down 8 days ago has been told that her husband too has been murdered in a night of violence in the province. Mrs. Elizabeth Hamilton has been in hospital in Belfast, suffering from severe shock since her brother's death. And early today, doctors had to break the news that her husband John had been found lying shot on the pavement near their home. Two policemen were also hurt when a van they were inspecting blew up in Newry. A second car bomb exploded later in the same town. Britain's beef and pig farmers are to get more money for their produce, but it shouldn't put up the housewife's food bill. Some hard bargaining in Brussels during the common market talks on farm prices resulted in Britain being treated as a special case. Now the beef and pig farmers can expect higher prices for their produce, but the housewife won't have to pay the extra. It'll come from a special subsidy, estimated to cost £53 million. An agreement on the deal has been hailed as a victory for both the housewives and the farmers. At the same time, delegates from other EEC countries are also happy with their agreement. They've been authorized to raise farm prices by an average of 9%. But reaction from Sir Henry Plumb, president of the National Farmers Union, was not quite so optimistic. He described the Brussels agreement as an extremely mixed bag, and he said he was seeking immediate talks with the Ministry of Agriculture. Sir Henry said the settlement might prevent some pig producers from going out of business, but it was not likely to encourage increased production. Well, now with sport, in a moment, Brian Sherry.
And some football results. In Division 3, Southend 3, York City 3. And in Division 4, Northampton 5, Darlington 0. And Reading 0, Bradford City 0. And the latest score from the on the third day of the fourth test between the West Indies and England. England in the first innings, of course, being 448. At the moment, the West Indies are 30 for no wicket.
Brian McSharry. And now some other news. The Beaverbrook newspaper crisis, the Action Committee representing workers on the three Scottish papers facing closure, has said they'll call a one-day strike in all British papers later this week if no progress is made with talks. Negotiations are at present going on between unions and the government. 9,000 people could lose their jobs if the papers fold. Just to recap on one of the headlines, Britain's High Commissioner in Uganda says no British subjects have been affected by last night's troubles in Uganda. And that's the news at 5:07.
Hello and welcome to This is London with Duncan Campbell. In this programme we take a look at a different street or district in London every week, find out a bit about what's going on there, and talk to some of the people who live or work there or grew up there. Last week we were down in Battersea, and next week we'll be visiting a street that very few people have ever been allowed to visit. And in the weeks to come after that we'll be heading off to Rotherhithe, Brixton, Golders Green, Greek Street and Goldhawk Road in Shepherd's Bush. And if you'd like to talk about any of those places from your experience of them, or in fact any area we haven't covered yet, then I'll give you the address to write to at the end of this programme. Well, this week we've gone north and into the borough of Brent, just south of Kingsbury, east of Harrow, and west of Willesden, which takes us to Wembley. Wembley, of course, translated into soccer terms, means Mecca, the Holy Grail at the end of the FA Cup competition. And we'll be talking to Leonard Went of the Wembley Stadium. hearing from someone who was one of that crowd of 140,000 at the first game played there, as well as talking to members of the Ugandan, Asian and West Indian communities who live in the area, hearing about teaching problems there from the head of Copeland High School Comprehensive, and also getting a little advance warning on the end of the world from somebody in Wembley High Road. Well, 100 years ago, Wembley was a hamlet with just over 1,000 people living in it. Now it's part of the Labour-controlled borough of Brent, which has a constituency of some 300,000. It got its name from Wemba's Lee, which means the farm or homestead of Wemba. For most of the Middle Ages, it was part of Harrow, and the Archbishop of Canterbury was the lord of the manor there. And after the Reformation, the history of Wembley was mainly in the hands of two medieval mafia families, the Lyons, who gave us not corner houses, but the man who founded Harrow School in 1572, that was John Lyon, and the other family was the Bellamys, who helped the accomplices in the Babington plot to kill Queen Elizabeth I and replace her with Mary, Queen of Scots. Now, of course, it basks in the reflected glory and occasional notoriety of Wembley Stadium, the stadium that dutifully provides us with both Christians and Lyons, though at different times. The Christians, you can see when Dr. Billy Graham comes over to warn us about the Armageddon. The Lions are, of course, the London Lions, our own, albeit foreign, ice hockey team. So to start with, let's hear about the history of the stadium from its press secretary, Leonard Went.
Wembley's just had its 50th year. It was built in 1923, primarily for the British Empire Exhibition. It cost £750,000 way back 50 years ago, but of course in today's values it's a different, it's worth millions.
Yeah.
The first event of any kind to go on at Wembley Stadium was the White Horse Cup final, the 1923 final between West Ham United and Bolton Wanderers, when Bolton won the cup 2-0, but it was estimated that something like 140,000 people crammed into the stadium. And after that fiasco, that was the only pay-at-the-gate cup final. Yeah. Nowadays, of course, unless you have a ticket, it's no good going along to Wembley Stadium.
Do you feel that the stadium has a lot of atmosphere? I know a lot of Scottish supporters would say that Hampden Park has much more in the way of atmosphere. Would you agree or disagree with them?
Well, to me, England-Scotland Day at Wembley is a marvellous occasion. The partisanship strikes right down the middle. There's always about 35,000 Scottish supporters here. So, obviously, the stage is set for a great day, and believe me, it's a wonderful day. It's like a cup final day. It's marvellous to see the crowds, and the noise, and of course the singing of the Bible in me when everything quietens at the drop of a hat is really a memorable moment.
And finally, what is your, apart from those internationals, what would you say was your most memorable moment, your happiest memory of Wembley?
Well, we've seen also at the World Cup final, the World Cup in 1966, of course, was one of our great occasions.
Yeah.
The Queen opened the matches, and she was present at the final day when England beat West Germany after extra time. I suppose when you look through the history of Wembley Stadium, its first 50 years, when Bobby Moore received the cup from the Queen in 1966, the World Cup, that was probably Wembley's greatest moment and Wembley's greatest triumph.
Leonard Went of Wembley Stadium. Well, we found somebody who was actually in the stadium back at that first match 50 years ago. And if you think you're smart to be able to pick up a ticket at all for any of the big games there, then listen to what Harry Gibbons paid, or rather didn't pay, on that historic occasion.
The one thing is, having watched the foundations of the stadium being built, seeing the stadium built right up to what it is now, and also going up to the stadium on the first cup final day just to have a look at the crowds. Well, the next thing we found was that we were being carried right into the stadium and this is probably the only time that I've seen a professional game and not had to pay.
And what other big games do you remember there? Have you seen any of the great teams playing there?
I have. I saw the Scotland playing the... they were then known as the Wembley Wizards. I saw them, and I think they probably had the finest forward line that anybody could ever wish to see.
Harry Gibbons talking about the Wembley Wizards, whose names are inscribed on the hearts of any Scottish football supporter worth his tam o'shanter and his can of export. Well, Harry Gibbons grew up in Wembley, and amongst his other memories of his childhood, there is the intriguing story of a Mr. Pease, also a sporting man, as we find out in this conversation.
At the back of the houses where I was born, and that was in Douglas Avenue, there were fields and football pitches, and there was a gentleman there who had apparently come out of the army, and he was a trumpeter. Now, he had a son of, I should say he was about 13 or 14, and he used to come out every night, the father, he used to come out and blow this trumpet to call his son in. But his son was always boasting about the way he played rugby. So one day we got over the football, over this playing football, and there were two chappies there who lived in our road, Jim and Bill Brown. And often the cows used to come over the field and leave their visiting card. So we thought, well, now look, we'll have a little trick, play a little trick on Peasy. So we put the football in front of one of the cow's visiting cards, told this chap Pease to go back and dive and to show us how he would collect a rugby ball on the field. He took a run of about 20 to 30 yards and dived, and as he dived, Jim Brown kicked the football out of the way, and poor Peasy just dived straight through the cow's visiting card.
Now, you were there during the First World War, is that right?
I was.
What do you remember of that, then?
Well, I think the only memory I've really got of the First World War was when it was, I think it was 1916 or 1917, when I was in the garden, in the back garden, and over miles up, it seemed to me then, were these Zeppelins. And my father came up the garden, grabbed me by my arm and said, come along, son, come in, they might drop a bomb on you.
And what do you remember in the way of entertainment? What did you do as children for good times in Wembley?
Shall we take it in the winter evenings most? What we used to do was go out and, about two or three of us, and probably it's a case of annoying the people in the houses. We used to get a pin, put a button on it, and tie a piece of cotton round to keep the button at the top of the pin, creep up to somebody's front room, and when we saw they were in there, put the pin into the putty, walk back over the other side of the road, pull a piece of cotton, and it made the pin go backwards and forwards, and the button used to rap on the front room window, and the people used to come out, you see, and open the door because they couldn't see anybody at all. So when they got in again, we used to do it again and keep this up for quite a while.
What about the sort of entertainment that you had to pay for? Were there cinemas and theatres and things?
Well, there was only one cinema in Wembley, and that was in the High Road up on the corner, I think it was on the corner of Lonsdale Road, and we knew it locally as the Flea Pit. Now, this was the only entertainment we had there, and on Saturdays we used to go up there, pay a penny to go in. And when we got inside, there were the wooden seats, and there was a chappie who we called Sardine Charlie, who used to pack us in as tight as he possibly could.
Now, we've just had a general election. Do you remember any great election campaigns in Wembley when you were young there?
The only thing I can really remember about it is when we came under Harrow then, and the local Conservative candidate was a chap named Isidore Salmon, and his Labour opponent was Oswald Mosley, who is now Sir Oswald Mosley. And we used to ride in a removal van go round the area in a removal van with about 30 or 40 of us kids, and I think the removal van was Gildersleeves, and we used to sing a little song about vote, vote, vote for Oswald Mosley, and then don't vote for Salmon anymore.
And if you're wondering whatever happened to Oswald Mosley, well, he's back in the country again, and he's just brought out a broadsheet about the election, which he regards, and I quote, as an overwhelming endorsement of entry into Europe, which is a novel interpretation of the result, if nothing else. How long, asks Action, the organ of the Action Party, which is the party founded by old Mosleyites, how long before Britain embraces that new system of government and national union and effective action? Sir Oswald answers, when the degree of crisis is sufficient to awaken our people, always slow to start, always resolute when they do. So that's what that Wembley candidate of before the war is thinking about these days. Well, somebody else who grew up in Wembley is Mr. Gibbon's wife, and if you think there's nothing romantic about the northern suburbs with their semi-detached homes and their steakhouses, then listen to what Mrs. Gibbons had to say when I asked her if Wembley had romantic memories for her.
Oh, I met my husband outside the gentleman's lavatories in the park.
did you used to go out together then around?
Yes, well, he took me home that time. My father refused in the house, but we used to sort of make dates on the quiet and walk around the local green spots, One Tree Hill, and so forth. And of course, I think really the reason I met him was because I had to take my sister out, you see, and I used to gravitate towards the park because that was the best place for meeting any member of the opposite sex.
The different bits of Wembley, were there some better areas to live in and some?
Yes, I think so. We moved in the other side of Wembley Hill in the 1930s. I can't remember the exact date. And we lived in a sort of stockbroker Tudor semi, you know. We had theatrical people living next door, and they were all much the same kind of houses. And when you crossed over the road, there was another development known as Monk's Park. I think that's still there, which was much the same sort of thing. Semis. You don't get much ribbon development there like you do in the south of London, you know, they're mostly semi-detached houses.
You were talking about the 30s. Did the Depression hit Wembley hard?
I can't say it. Well, I didn't notice it particularly because my father's a civil servant. And I can't remember many of my friends being very much affected by it. I do remember going away from that, the coaches coming through with the football supporters up Main Harrow Road. They used to be leaning out of the windows and throwing pennies, which we were not allowed to pick up because it wasn't considered the right thing to do.
Now, many of the houses in Wembley were built in the 20s and 30s. A mixture of people lived there, civil servants, post office workers, white-collar workers, and a fair smattering of people who worked in radio or in the music business. Victor Sylvester had a house there, so more recently did Millicent Martin. And last week, Dana, the Irish singer, moved into a house in Wembley that doubtless has all kinds of everything in it. Jenny Mayflower is someone who learnt her music in Wembley too. I asked her if she could remember her days as a piano pupil.
I used to get the train from Willesden Green Station and go to Wembley Park Station and then walk down to the Wembley Studio of Music, which had moved from Crookerwood Conservatoire, you see.
And what were the other pupils like? Do you remember them?
Well, I can remember the very first little boyfriend I ever had when I was six. We played piano duets. His name was Bernard Bamborough. But when I was about 12, I remember falling in love for the first time with one of the boys that played the piano, played the violin at the Wembley Studio. His name was Donald Armid. And I used to sort of listen in rapt to him and hardly dared speak to him because he was 16 and I was only 12. And then one day at the Saturday concerts afternoon, he actually spoke to me and said, "Is the door open yet?" And I said, "No, it's locked." So we stood outside talking, and then in the end he found it was open.
Now you still live in the borough of Brent. What do you reckon are the best parts of Brent? Do you reckon Wembley comes high on the list, or what are your favourite parts of Brent?
Well, I'm terrifically interested in parks, and I love Barham Park at Wembley. That's got beautiful flowers. But I also love Gladstone Park, which is in Crookerwood. The trouble is that now I'm nearly housebound. I've got the stupid illness of agoraphobia, which was made worse in 1968 in a choking vapor gun bank raid. And I get very breathless and panicky. And sometimes I can't even get to the parks, let alone anywhere else. And people don't seem to understand agoraphobia, because in my job, I used to have to travel a lot and be an executive. And look at me now.
Jenny Mayflower talking about her early duets and the problems of agoraphobia, how she can't get see the parks of Wembley anymore. I think there is an organisation called Agoraphobics Anonymous. Perhaps if someone from that organisation is listening, they might like to write to me. I could pass the letter on. I'll be giving the studio's address at the end of the programme. Well, like all parts of London, Wembley has its educational problems. It was a subject touched upon by Dr. Brock, the headmaster since 1968 of Copeland High School, comprehensive on the Wembley High Road. He said he wondered if perhaps there wasn't too much confidence placed in the teaching profession, giving rise to an apparent apathy about the teaching situation. I asked him what he felt were the problems facing the school.
The most immediate and most pressing problem which faces London schools is the difficulty in recruiting an adequate number of experienced, suitably qualified staff. This means that as in the case of this school, sometimes there has to be part-time education. This is bad in itself, but it also means that with the arrangements we make, children are sometimes in school not following the lessons they should have, but just being supervised. This makes them restless, discontented, increases our disciplinary problems.
Now, another thing that you mentioned in your speech was that we used to hope that schools could help change society, and in fact you feel now that they perhaps just reflect society. How would you say this was illustrated from your experience at Copeland?
Well, I think when I said that we hoped that schools would change society, we hoped that schools would eliminate class consciousness, eliminate differences between classes. In my years as a schoolmaster, I really haven't seen any significant change here. There's certainly been economic change. There's far less difference in inequalities of wealth, as represented certainly in this school. But the child from the educated middle-class home will still tend to make far greater progress than the child who comes from a culturally deprived background.
The pupils here wear uniforms. Is this a definite policy that they should be identifiable? You're in favour of uniforms?
There's one point here. The sixth form, which has been developed in the last few years, has never been required to wear uniform. They have this freedom. It is the wish of the school and the staff, expressed by a ballot some little while ago. The majority of them wish to retain a school uniform. It is traditional, and I don't think yet that there is sufficient reason to change this tradition.
You've got a lot of Asian, some West Indian pupils, quite a mixture, in fact, in the school. How do all the different groups get along together?
Yes, we have indeed a very large mixture. We have a large West Indian community. We have a large Asian community. The majority of these are Indians from East Africa.
Yeah.
Our experience is that they do not, except in the sixth form, and to a lesser extent in the fifth form, they tend to choose their friends, their associates, from among their own racial groups. And there are such large numbers in the school that they do tend, in many ways, to form separate communities within the school, sometimes even within a form. I'm pleased to say that one finds very little evidence of open racial hostility, but I would like to see very much more mingling of the groups. But the fact remains that they tend to choose their friends from people of their own race.
Dr. Brock, the headmaster of Copeland High School Comprehensive, talking about the school. The situation with teachers in Brent is now so bad that a special meeting to discuss the teacher shortage is to be held at Copeland High School next Wednesday, arranged by the Brent Teachers Association. The borough is still short of some 70 teachers, and Wembley High School is so short of space that the borough is having to provide temporary accommodation for some of the pupils there. Well, in the second half of the programme, we'll be meeting Mr. Bland, the editor of the Wembley News, and hearing about some of Wembley's current preoccupations. We'll be talking to Wesley Duncan, who runs the record shop in Screws, about what happens when the lights go down on the Harrow Road. We'll be meeting someone outside Wembley's central station with a grim warning for all of us, and we'll be finding out just what a Wembley snob is. That's in a few minutes' time, after the local news on the half hour, so stay with us and join us again after the news.
It's 5:30, this is Malcolm Rennie. Britain's High Commissioner in Uganda says no British subjects have been affected by last night's troubles in Uganda, and President Amin says he's very much in control. The President of the National Farmers Union, Sir Henry Plum, has described the Brussels Agriculture Agreement as an extremely mixed bag, and said he would be seeking immediate talks with the Ministry of Agriculture. But he said the settlement might prevent some big producers from going out of business, but it was not likely to encourage increased production. An Ulster woman who was with her brother when he was gunned down 8 days ago has been told her husband has been murdered in a night of violence in the province. Mrs. Elizabeth Hamilton's husband was one of two men killed this weekend. The Queen is not expected to go to the Amberley Hall show at Cirencester to see Princess Anne and Captain Mark Phillips. The Princess and her husband are expected to travel to Windsor Castle tonight to see the Queen. The Labour Party's national agent, Mr. Reg Underhill, says the party's organisation in some safe seats at the election was deplorable and disgraceful. He says the party must be ready for another election at any time. Building Society leaders will meet on Thursday, 2 days after the budget, to decide whether they'll be raising the 11% mortgage rates paid by Britain's 4 million home buyers. Political observers feel Tuesday's budget will be a Robin Hood affair, with extra benefits for the lower paid and less for the wealthy. And now the London and South East News. An MP has described as grotesque part of a new army recruitment campaign. He's Mr. Eric Moonman, Labour member for Basildon. He was attacking a whole-page advertisement which appeared in a Sunday newspaper this morning, dismissing it as self-defeating rubbish. The advertisement shows a photograph of some 50 tanks and other military vehicles and a caption which reads, "One day, my boy, this could all be yours." Mr. Moonman spoke to our reporter, Michael Brook.
Well, I think it's grotesque because that it's self-defeating. It's also going to have the effect, I believe, of creating a feeling of bad taste. And this is something, obviously, that I would want to raise in the Commons. I suspect that they're very concerned about the problems in Northern Ireland, where the vast number of our troops go. But I don't think this advertisement's going to help.
What would you raise in the Commons about it?
First of all, the whole question of control of advertisements. This particular gathering of people and tanks is frightening. It's going to have a very, very bad effect. This, I think, is going right the way back and getting little boys to play with their guns and tanks. And I think, unless there's some Freudian thing about this advertisement which escapes me, I think it's something that we want to get rid of. In a week when we've lost three newspapers, one would hope that the answer to survival isn't to produce this rubbish.
Police are looking for two men who ransacked the home of a 69-year-old woman in Tooting during the night. The woman, whose name has not yet been given, answered the door to a flat to two men. They knocked her down, tied her up, and ransacked the flat, and they ransacked two others nearby. In East London, a man has been rushed to hospital with severe burns after a fire in a caravan. It started in a yard in Stepney. It's now been put out, but the caravan's been destroyed. The North Kensington Labour Party has decided to drop two West Indian councillors at the forthcoming council elections in May. Councillor Edgar Rennie and Councillor Bill Oliver were elected to the council 3 years ago, but Councillor Rennie has decided to run as an independent after being urged to do so by members of the public. He'll be a candidate for the Godbourne ward, where there's a sizable West Indian population. Two Greater London Council housing schemes have received 1973 Civic Trust Commission commendations. They're the Oakhampton Road Project at Harold Hill and the Foxley Road Modernisation at Brixton. Architects responsible for the Romford project say they're trying to create a sense of individuality and identity within a rather featureless and windswept landscape. In Brixton, 39 flats have been built by modernising the interiors of the original nine houses. High prices for venison have caused an increase in deer poaching, especially in the south of England, according to the Forestry Commission. The Commission's head ranger, Mr. Richard Pryor, has called for a higher penalty for poachers. He says at the moment poachers just laugh at the £3 fine, often imposed by magistrates. With venison selling at about 50 pence a pound, a man can make as much as £100 from a night shooting. New anti-fraud date stamps designed to make it difficult to forge London Transport Red Bus passes and go-as-you-please tickets tomorrow. The new date stamps use different abbreviations for some months. Scotland Yard are appealing for help in identifying a man who was killed in a car crash in London yesterday. The man, in his middle 20s and of slim build, was a passenger in a red Triumph TR6 sports car which crashed into a tree in Highbury yesterday. The man was wearing a leather coat and blue jeans. Two people were killed in the accident. Two are unconscious in hospital. And at 25 to 6, that's the news.
Catch up with LBC. Regular news every half hour, local, national and international. LBC, where reporters are on the story, not in the studio. Where you hear the news as it happens 24 hours a day. Catch up with LBC, the radio station where the news comes first.
Welcome back to This is London with Duncan Campbell in Wembley. Well, we were talking before the news to Dr. Brock about the problems that face schools in the area. There is, of course, a large Jewish community in Wembley, and there has recently been a proposal by the Brent Council to set up a sixth form entry Jewish secondary school. But Harrow's not in favour of this plan, which would encompass Brent and Harrow and Barnet. Well, what about school leavers? The current economic situation has meant a great lack of jobs available, but some have been lucky. One of these is Mary, who works at a boutique in Wembley called Snob. Well, it was fairly obvious what she did during the day, so I asked her what she did in her evenings.
Go for a drink, cinema.
Is there anything in the way of dancing, nightclubs, things like that?
A couple. Nothing that I'd go to.
Why not?
Bit rough.
No, you went to school in the Wembley area, is that right?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Very rough.
Very rough. Who said living in the suburbs was soft? Well, we were talking earlier about all those musicians who used to live in Wembley. What happens there musically now? I thought the person who ought to know was Wesley Duncan, who runs a record business in a place called Screws. And with light music playing away gently in the background there, I asked him what the musical tastes of his customers were.
Very heavy. Everything from Led Zeppelin right to the Maharishi, John Coltrane, Chick Corea, people like that. It's really heavy in Wembley. And with, I should say the added appreciation of the Motown and the soul market is very good.
Now, when does that interest in the soul market spring from? Is this because there's a fairly large West Indian community out here?
I would say yes. I would say mainly because it's bordered to Harlesden and the West Indian overspilled from places like Harlesden. They influenced the youngsters about, on the soul scene. But certainly there is that element of truth about it.
Yeah. And what about the things that people do in the evening? What do they do? Do they go to clubs, youth clubs? What sort of entertainments are laid on?
Yeah, youth clubs, local discos. Yeah, that's always the favorite pastime of most of the young people in Wembley. I think the pubs and the discos certainly take pass the time away, certainly, especially at weekends.
Do all the different, there's quite a large Asian community, West Indian community, as well as local English community, do they all mix the young people in their clubs, or are there different places?
No, I think the integration thing is really on. I think it's working very smoothly. The Asians, they obviously like to keep to themselves and to their own customs, but there are a few that do try and mix, and get away from the custom thing. But certainly there isn't any club that I know of that is mainly West Indian, mainly English, or mainly Asians.
Wesley Duncan. Wembley has incidentally just appointed its first Jamaican-born police officer, Mrs. Petura Pascoe, who hopes that other immigrants will join her. There has been a large influx of Ugandan Asians over the last few years. You can see their influence in the number of fine curry houses, sari shops, and even the occasional poster for an Indian film. Despite the attempts of various candidates at the last election to try and raise the old bogeys about the immigrant community, integration has been for the most part peaceful, and the local people have chosen to ignore the strange ramblings of the various political groups who see a threat lurking behind every chapati. I spoke to Dilip, a Ugandan Asian who came to this country with his family from Uganda 6 years ago.
There are quite a lot of Indian people in Wembley. I know of that because, as you'll see in papers, that you get quite a lot of festivals done over here in Diwali's, New Year, and Indian festival, Ras and Garba, and things like that.
I mean, have you found the people of Wembley quite friendly?
Oh yes, they are very friendly. Generally, we found them very friendly. Even when there is a football match over here, find quite a lot of things happening around here, but generally people are very nice.
A Ugandan Asian talking about Wembley and the various people who visit the stadium. Not, of course, that it's only football that goes on there. There's speedway and basketball and badminton going on at the moment, as well as the Rugby League Cup final greyhound racing and the five-a-side soccer competition and lots of pop concerts with people like the Rolling Stones, David Cassidy, and that local boy made very good, Elton John, who was to have performed at the Wembley Empire Pool in May but is cancelled because of exhaustion. It's all that carrying around candles in the rain. Well, the arrival of new groups brings new religions to join the wide variety that exist in Wembley already. They range from Jehovah's Witnesses to Baptists to Methodists to Buddhists. Most of them tend to encourage people to come and visit them with their posters and hoardings. but one sect is actually out on the high road, pamphlet in hand and song doubtless in heart, preaching to the people of Wembley. He's a member of the Children of God and has come all the way from Houston, Texas, to let us know about some fairly pressing matters, as we discover in this interview conducted to a background of buses and Thursday morning shoppers.
First of all, can I ask you what it is you're trying to sell?
Well, I'm trying to get out the words that I think are going to change the world.
And what exactly are they?
They're written by Moses David. We call them O-letters.
Mm. And what sort of things do they contain in these booklets?
A variety of things, from political to how to dress. Mm. He's just like a father to us, and we think these words the world needs to know some things that God's given. We thank God is speaking right now. He's speaking, and he's giving people what they need. And we think these words are what the world needs right now.
And how has Wembley been reacting to what the world needs?
Well, not only Wembley, we feel that the whole of Europe, we feel that God really loves Europe. And we're trying right now to really make love to Europe with God's words. And we believe that Europe, the whole of Europe will react. So will Wembley. Wembley has received us to some extent. And
what sort of reaction do you get? You're walking up and down outside Wembley Central now. What sort of reaction have you got from local people?
Well, sad to say, everywhere. It's not really, really receptive. People have their eyes closed to the truth, you know. It's just people, I don't know, prefer darkness. But we're trying to give them what God's given us, and they're receiving it some, you know. Some do receive, and those that do, and they really partake, they're really glad.
Do you ever get a hostile reaction from people around here?
Sure, yes.
What sort of things do they say to you?
If you think of them, that's what they say. Whatever you can think of.
And I mean, I've seen some of your leaflets. Some of them seem, there was one talking that explaining the end of the world was coming very, very shortly, as far as I remember. And there was one called, I Am a Toilet as well. Some of them, do you not think things like that might confuse the issue for people when they don't think the end of the world is coming, or they don't think they're a toilet, you know?
Well, it's just like saying, don't confuse me with the facts, you know. You know, just like saying I don't want to understand. Just let me go on in my little puddle. We're not trying to, you know, we're not doing this out of spite just to shake people up and stuff. We believe it. And we believe the world is coming to an end shortly. And we're doing it because we love people.
And how shortly, I mean, do you reckon it's coming to an end?
Well, before I'm 22 now, before I'm an old man, I believe that Jesus will be back.
One of the members of the Children of God talking outside Wembley Central Station. But while Wembley waits for the end of the world, there are still some problems to be taken care of. One of the places that helps with these is the Wembley Citizens Advice Bureau, who receive a grant from the borough and deal with everything from social security questions to advice about taxes. That's the kind you pay, not the kind you're helped into late at night. I asked the organizer of the bureau, Joyce Friend, what the majority of the cases she dealt with were.
25% deal with some kind of housing difficulty, mainly landlord and tenant disputes over increases in rent, rates, etc. Personality clashes between the landlord and the tenant, and requiring some type of alternative accommodation.
Yes. How much have the problems changed in the 10 years that you've been working here?
Well, certainly as far as housing is concerned, this has increased in proportion considerably. I mean, as I say, it's now 25%. I should say 10 years ago it might have accounted for 10 or 15% of the problems. So it has increased in volume. The whole context, the whole number of problems has increased in the whole, you know, there's been far more people coming in, but the proportion has changed in the sense there are far more housing than there used to be.
Mm. Why do you think this is?
Partly because previous, in 10 years ago, Wembley was mainly owner-occupied houses. Now there's a lot of multiple occupation. Owner-occupiers are inclined to let rooms off, so you get far more friction, you get overcrowding. You've had a large immigrant population moving into the borough, so the, you know, the whole context has changed in the sense that the population has changed over the last 10 years, both in number and in you know, the type of people that are living here.
Do you find that a lot of people that you come across aren't aware of most of a lot of their rights?
Yes, quite a number, yes. I think, you know, people are beginning to read more about rights and beginning to take up what they think, you know, or inquire as to what their rights might be. But a lot of them come in here with no idea at all to what they are entitled or how to set about claiming it or, you know, doing what to do about it.
Mrs. Joyce Friend of the Citizens Advice Bureau. Perfect name for a job like that, isn't it? Like Mrs. Bun the Baker. Happy families. Well, the Brent Citizens Advice Bureau got about 20,000 inquiries last year. That's an increase of 20%, lots more problems. An increase that probably has a lot to do with the Housing Finance Act, with a lot of tenants realising that they could apply for a rent rebate or a rent allowance. In fact, there have been so many housing problems in the area that the council set up a Brent Housing Aid Centre. Now, another place in Wembley that gives advice is the Wembley Counselling Service, which advertises itself on postcard ads in newsagents, amongst other places. The chairman of the counselling service and a Methodist minister is David Cardew, who lives in Kingsway in Wembley. He's also involved with another local project called Concord, and this is one that's actually taken off and uses an old church as a centre for old people, amongst other things. I spoke to him and asked him about the counselling service.
Do you feel that the problems that you deal with up in a place like Wembley would be different from other parts of London, say the centre or the East End or south of the river?
I think we get a certain number of problems with people who are under pressure because of their work. And Wembley has got a fairly middle-class background in some of its areas. But we also get the sort of problems that could come up anywhere. Multiracial, crowded housing, marriage difficulties, somebody who is just finding the strain of life too much for no particular reason except that perhaps their personality is not as strong as others. This, I think, one can get and one does get anywhere in London. Yeah. So I don't think there's anything unique with us there.
No, you are attached, the service is attached to the Methodist Church. Is there a danger that people who are, say, agnostic or atheist might be scared away a bit by that?
This has been one of our big fears. The scheme actually is attached to the Council of Churches, so it's run from all the churches. But this is something we've felt very strongly, and our big problem has been to try and find rooms elsewhere where we can be impersonal.
When I was in Battersea last week, and a woman told me that the people in Battersea, people south of the river, were much warmer than people in the north. Do you think this is true from your experience of working up here?
I have also worked in South London, but further south, in Surrey area, and found the people very similar to around here. Many of them are under great pressure from work, financial, and also the plain time factors. A very small insight is that for any church or organisational meetings, we can seldom start before 8 o'clock because folk often are simply not home. This sort of pressure I find similar all over the place. Certainly in the places I've discovered, north and south of the river, people tend to retract back into their own castle and need a bit of wheedling and winkling out if they're to be involved in their local area.
David Cardew of the Wembley Counselling Service. Well, if we've been discussing how to take care of the mind and the soul, what about the body? I met a Wembley chemist called Mr. Carsons, who moved to the Harrow Road from Islington 3 years ago, and I asked him about his work.
You deal with a lot of people from behind the counter. Do you find people friendlier up here than down in that part of London?
No, I wouldn't say so. I would say they were more friendly in Islington than they are here.
Yeah.
Perhaps when they get to know you, I've been here now 3 years, and they're becoming more friendly. But I would say they were much easier to deal with in Islington.
Yeah.
They required less pampering, if you like.
And what about living, actually, in Wembley? Because you live not very far from your business. How's Wembley as a place to live?
Oh, it's very pleasant. It's changed over the last few years, of course. But one is quite near the city in the West End, about 20 minutes by train. And, of course, you've got the countryside as well, probably about a quarter of an hour's ride by car from Wembley, whereas in the city one has further to go.
You're very close to the stadium. Do you ever notice the crowds coming down?
Oh yes, one can't help seeing 100,000 people when they do arrive for the big matches and other things that they have on here.
And are you ever called to assist people as in your role as a chemist or not?
Oh yes, very often we have quite a number of cases of travel sickness and slight accidents, cuts and grazes, people falling over. And one or two fights occasionally,
yes.
I suppose. Usually the ambulance people handle this.
Hangovers as well, do you have to deal with or not?
Oh, we do, yes. I think most chemists have this from time to time, wherever they are.
Is there a special remedy for that or not?
I have a secret one of my own, which I'll give you a sample, if you like. It seems to work quite well.
Now, I always feel that being a pharmacist must be quite a serious profession. Is there a humorous side to it at all or not?
Oh yes, indeed. Although I suppose it is serious that most of the time we do get our humorous side to it. On one occasion, this may sound serious to begin with, but we had a patient waiting for a prescription, and unfortunately he collapsed and died. In this particular case, he hadn't paid his levy, which at that time was, I think, about 2 shillings. And I think this is the reason that the government said that all prescriptions have to be prepaid. You know that most chemists ask for the money before they dispense the prescription. We, in fact, don't. We give you a few minutes in which to get it together.
Mr. Carson's a Wembley chemist. Wembley's well served by local newspapers. There's the Wembley and Brent Times that publish down in Kilburn Lane. Then there's the Wembley Observer, which comes out a couple of times a week. And there's the Wembley News, part of the Westminster Press Group. One of the big stories currently concerns a local park, Gladstone Park, which is in the middle of a mild scandal right now. There were plans to put up a statue of a nude woman there, but Mr. Beckett, the Director of Development, said that the plans had to be abandoned because the statue could be, I quote, subjected to attentions other than artistic appreciation of local youths, if sighted in an area not under constant supervision. Could, of course, get bitten in the backside by a police dog, I suppose. Well, I spoke to the editor of the Wembley News, Mr. Bland, who is in the process of moving offices after 50 years in the same place. I asked him what sort of stories his paper had been covering recently.
Well, naturally, there had been considerable concern over the sort of national crisis, particularly as it affecting the rating position. Brent was very, very worried because they expected to have an increase of 14.5p in the pound in the rates. It was only what we referred to in our issue of March the 15th as a last-minute reprieve on Thursday, that of last week, that Brent was told she would get a reduction of threepence halfpenny in the actual rate as a result of a further contribution from the government.
Yeah.
This has been sort of hailed by the controlling party on the council as a sort of great tribute to the present state of affairs in the country.
Yes. What sort of other stories have you been running apart from the rating one then?
Well, we've naturally been interested in the sort of industrial position because Wembley, though it's well known as what I might call essentially suburbia, also has considerable trading estates. And despite the power crisis and the oil crisis, trade has been quite brisk. And the factories have kept pretty sharp, really. And last week we were able to announce that some of them have kept up to 70% of their normal production, despite the problems.
What sort of direction do you see Wembley going in the next 5-10 years in terms of building, housing, population, etc.?
Well, there is likely to be an intensification of development. Wembley's already quite intensely developed. There have been sort of greedy eyes cast at times on the open spaces which Wembley has. It's better off than its neighbour and sort of partner in Brent, Willesden. And people have suggested that Wembley perhaps has got more than its fair share of green land. But I think the council are conscious of the fact that having got something worthwhile, they really want to keep it. There are plans at the moment for sort of turning part of Friant Way open space. It wasn't originally a Middlesex County Council regional open space. They're turning that into what one might almost call a small forest there at the moment, planting thousands of trees. Some of them will be quite small, but some of them are quite mature. They're putting in mature trees in place of some of the elderly trees which have to be felled. In a few years' time, it should look quite an interesting development, a sort of picnic area, a sort of Epping Forest of the Northwest in a very, very modest way. So we've got something to look forward in that respect. The Tories were hoping to establish a golf course on this area, but if these trees get their roots down, it looks as though the golf course idea has gone for a good many years.
Mr. Bland, the editor of the Wembley News, one subject, of course, that he and his papers will be covering is the local elections. Since Brent became a borough, they've had, first of all, a Labour council, then a Conservative one, and now they have a Labour one once again. In the election, the general election, two Labour members, Mrs. Friesen and Pavitt, were returned for Brent East and South, and Dr. Rhodes Boyson, who was on one of our very earliest This Is London programmes when we were in Highbury, won for the Conservatives in Brent North. Two National Front candidates managed about 3,000 votes between them of the 90,000 votes cast. Well, that's all we have time for from Wembley. Next week we'll be visiting that strange forbidden street I mentioned at the beginning of the programme. And the week after that we'll be in Rotherhithe, and future programmes will take us to Brixton, Gilders Green, Greek Street, Goldhawk Road and Shepherd's Bush. And I'd just like to remind you that if you live in any of those areas, or if you have something you'd like to say about their good points or their bad points, drop me a line. The address is Duncan Campbell, This Is London, LBC, Communications House, Gough Square, London EC4. Or you can phone up 353 1010 and just leave a message for me to call you. That's if you live in any of those areas. So until next week, when we'll be back again at the usual time of 8 on Saturday, 3 p.m. on Sunday, this is Duncan Campbell thanking Ray Gannon and Valerie Lightbrook, our sound technicians, and hoping you'll tune in to This Is London again next week.
This is London Broadcasting. The time is 6 o'clock. This is Malcolm Rennie with a roundup of half an hour of the national and international news. the headlines.
It's quite a good show.
I don't think so, somehow. But did you think I might see a little more?
I don't agree with that, Malcolm. quite frankly.